Welcome, and you're kind of our unsung hero. Thanks for all of you do in helping us put these meetings together and the materials.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for letting me help. And I am now recording, so we're all live and taking minutes and looking forward to another substantive meeting.
Very good. So I probably ought to see. I was going to turn on my camera, but it's already on. So we're live, and we'll officially call the meeting to order. We have a quorum, and we have a pretty good agenda. And so it's best, I think, if we get started. So I want to issue another warm welcome to everyone who has joined us, all of the members of our board, and those that will be presenting. Thank you for joining and also preparing for this meeting. I need to excuse our Lieutenant Governor. He is meeting at this moment with our congressional delegation, and they're kind of out and away in the backwoods, and so the cell service is limited, and he is probably not going to be able to join us, but he wanted me to let you know that he's been following what we're doing, and he's been having regular discussions with our director, Alan Matheson, and he also appreciates your service. And so with that, we'll move on. Maybe before we get into the business, I think all the board members know how busy we've been the last few weeks. This has been a really meaty work, including having to hold a kind of a special meeting to take up some issues that needed to be addressed in a timely way. We've been overseeing a site survey. We've been getting, as you know, our consulting team in place. We've been looking with Muriel's help at a number of communication products, and we're starting to zero in on finalizing many of those, and she's going to talk about that today. We've had a number of meetings with RCLCO, Aaron, and your team, and with some really challenging questions about what our organization should look like at the end of the day and going forward, and also what is the best economic strategy. We kicked off our working groups, and many of you have participated in those as chairing and helping lead that effort. And that's all been accomplished within the last few weeks. Thank you very much for your efforts. It's been very busy, but I'll also let you know that you shouldn't look at the next few weeks as any kind of a reprieve. So buckle up, and we're gonna continue to move forward. So the first or the second item on the agenda is we have two different meeting agendas to approve that will take some action. We held our regular meeting July 14th, 2020. You have those meetings in front of you that Tyler helped get to us and look at. And the other is to approve the meeting minutes of July 27th, 2020. I can take both of those in one motion, and I'm going to ask you if you would like to make a motion. If you'd raise your hand, I'll call on you and receive that motion. So I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of both. If you're not able to do that, make that in one motion, then we'll separate them. But I would entertain a motion with both.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Walker, I so move that we approve both items.
Thank you, Mayor. Do I have a second? Thank you, David. It's been moved by Mayor Walker and seconded by Commissioner to approve the minutes of both meetings. All in favor say aye.
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 If there are any opposed, if you'd raise your hand so I can see that and record any opposition if you are live with us. Not seeing any hands and not hearing any opposition, we will move that that motion passes unanimously, and the minutes of both meetings have been approved. Item number four on our agenda is the public comment section. where we allow any members of the public who may have joined us and is part of this meeting. This is a public meeting, as you all know. If anyone would like to make a comment, we would welcome your comment, subject to our limitation in our rules of a 3-minute period. If you are a member of the public and would like to comment, if you would speak up, please. Not hearing any comments, we'll move on to the next item. Item number 5 on our agenda relates to disposition of state-owned properties lying adjacent to the correctional property. So when we think of the work that we're doing with, we call it the prison property or the correction property, there is actually additional adjacent property. And Jim Russell needs to leave a little bit early today, so we're going to move his item up and take it now, so that kind of out of order, so that we can get his input on that issue before he leaves. And I think, Jim, you did join us. I think I saw your name come up. So with that, we'll turn the time to you.
Okay, thank you, Representative. So I mentioned a few months back, it was probably about a year ago, that we have these two facilities. I think we showed them in a meeting, and that they'd probably be in the best interest of this project to move them away from off from this site. So they actually are part of the acreage that we're talking about. The one is the DNR Lone Peak facility, which is on the south east portion of the property as you drive into the prison. There's 35 acres there. It used to have a tree growing operation that's not in use anymore, but it's a fire management facility for DNR. It is about 35 acres. We have a 10-acre parcel in South Salt Lake that we can move them to, so we own the property and they would like to move there. We will be proposing a project through the building board and the legislature and the IGG committee this year to move that facility. It has a price tag of about $13 million, but it will free up 35 acres that can be sold as part of this development. So even if you're really conservative, that's $35 million worth of property and, you know, $14 million worth of investment to move them. So that would be a wise investment, even on the conservative end. And I think this property is going to go for probably more than $1 million an acre, at least that portion of it, where it's near the freeway and on the outlying portion. Probably double that, maybe even. So the other property is on the southwest portion, and it's over where you can get off 215 and access this property. It's where Surplus Properties Fleet Services is located for their vehicles, and then DSCM has a grounds facility that operates there. That one is probably a little bit less of a lucrative deal, and I think that maybe some opinions on whether we leave that there or move it might be justified. The price at $1 million an acre will probably be fairly equal for moving the facility or leaving it there. The value of the property probably at $1 million is a little less than what it would take to move that facility. I plan to push those forward and hope to have support for those this year. I think they're timing-wise, it would take us, if we had projects approved this year, that would start on July of 2021, and we would be vacating this site by the existing prison. By the UDC would probably vacate that site a year later in July of 2022. So time is kind of critical for this. And so that's kind of what I mentioned, that I would bring this up as an informational item. And so I'm just presenting that before you today for information purposes.
Thank you, Jim. Questions from board members? You all understand what Jim is, what he's discussed and what he's essentially proposing? Any questions?
Oh, this is Mayor Walker. I want to make sure I do. So what you're proposing is that ultimately the value of this property would come back to the agency when it gets developed. Is that, am I hearing that right, or was I not paying attention?
So the agency doesn't own the property, DSCM does, or the state of Utah.
Okay.
So when the property is sold, the value would come to the state and to the taxpayers, not to the agency.
Okay.
But we just need to relocate them if we're to sell that property.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jim. I think this is good thinking, because those parcels really fill out the edge of the prison site, you know, and really will aid, in my opinion, in substantial development that can occur around it. So I think it's outstanding. And that seems like a fair deal. Whatever it is, I'd definitely go back to the taxpayer and the state.
This is April. I agree. I've gone up to that surplus sometimes to buy military vehicles or fencing or cables and stuff. And aesthetically, it's probably not, it's really industrial. So I think it's great if we try to move them now before the real estate gets too much more valuable there. So I think that's a good idea, Jim.
So I didn't mention that both the property where we would move Fleet Surplus is across from the Ramped In building and the Taylorsville State Office building that we're renovating. So it's the drive, if you're familiar with Taylorsville, 2700 West and 4100 South, 4300 South, sorry, there's a highway patrol driving range on the west side of the road, and it would be placed on that property. So we have property that the state already owns to occupy, or for both of these facilities to be moved, so we don't have to buy any additional real estate as well.
Thank you, Jim. Other questions? For the record, when Jim talks about the highway patrol driving range, he's not talking about part of their golf course. So,
well, you could do that down there.
Yeah. So I don't know that I've seen that property, Jim, but I have had, I think, conversations with Mayor Walker or early on when we were talking about the breadth of this board's development was property on the east side of the freeway owned by the state. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yes, I do. So we have the prison administration facility. We have the academy there, the post academy, and then we have an empty plot of land, and then you move down to where we have the DMV, DLD facility, and then the liquor store. And I might have those two backwards, but all of that property on the east side is also state-owned. There has been some discussion at some point that we move that prison admin out to the new prison location. And we do have property for that there. And that's certainly that could be discussed as we move forward, whether there's value to locate that facility out there on other state property as well.
That potentially that property that Jim has talked about has significant development value, not just for economic value dollars, so to speak, but potentially with its being off the freeway there has great potential for sustained economic value as well. At least that's my opinion of it. That's something, Jim, we can continue to look at.
Yeah, and I didn't propose anything on that at this time. I think that's a good discussion for us to have in the future, whether we want to do that and maybe look at the economics of it. The other two, I'm just bringing them forward because we're really at a time-sensitive point if we want to be able to vacate those properties in time for this project.
Okay.
So, Larry, if I could add something about that, I, you know, first of all, I want to be clear. We like our DMV and liquor store. being an essential business, it's been very well used over the pandemic. But if you look at that property and where a potential transit line might connect from the prison site into the southbound light rail or whatever we end up doing, that whole area, if we have that as part of our development, we could really integrate a way to get people across the freeway, whether it's a bridge, one of those high speed gondolas, or Elon Musk's tunnel. I think that would be an essential piece of property to add in what we're doing to make it all work, the transit connection, and just enhance the economic power of the site.
Good point, Mayor. And it's good that we're having this discussion now, both on the longer range issue, but also on the issue that Jim raises that needs more immediate attention. Are you looking for any kind of board action at this point, Jim, or you're just advising us?
So it's just an informational item, although, when it gets over to the legislature, any support that we can get over there, if members of the board are so inclined, would be helpful. Like I say, there is, if we're going to do it.
Right. Well, let us know then.
It would be helpful, Larry, to get everyone over there and let them see it from above Pluralsight. I think it would be helpful for people to see what we're talking about, because it would really add, like you said, significant economic punch to the whole thing.
I think so.
Could
too.
I lose you for a minute?
Yeah.
You're back, Jim.
Yeah, I think somebody was calling my phone, and I think I got put on hold. So, okay.
Well, Jim, when the time comes, if you need that legislative support, if you let us know, and we can take a formal action as a board, and individual members who are lawmakers of this will be supportive as well.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on then to the next item on the agenda, and it's my pleasure to introduce, and I'll let him introduce himself, Stephen Kellenberg, our planner consultant. Steve, welcome to the committee. I can honestly say, in this case, your reputation precedes you. We've undergone I think a pretty robust process of interviewing a number of really high quality, or what I call world class, candidates that could fill this position. And I'm just really pleased, and I think the board is pleased, that we've selected you. And so we welcome you to our first, welcome you as a first time to our official board meeting. And with that, I'd like to turn some time to you and allow you to introduce yourself and let us get a little more acquainted with you.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, everybody. It's nice to meet you all. It's an honor to be here. I think this is we consultants that are part of this group, I think, look out, we see this as one of those projects that you don't see very often in your career. And to be able to be a part of it, I'm really excited, because it's just a great project just to be involved with. But also, I think, it's one of those where we all learn so much, because the quality of the people that are involved in this and are going to be involved. I mean, this will truly be a state-of-the-art, best-in-class planning and an exploration of best planning and urban design principles in the 21st century. And it almost takes a public project to do that, because there's more of a responsibility. So it's really exciting to be here. A little bit about me. I'm a urban planner. I've been around a while, 40 years in the industry. My specialty is large-scale new communities and mixed-use projects. I've worked for not that many companies, because I tend to stick around a while, but most of my, I'd say the central part of my consulting career was with large international consulting firms of EDAW and AECOM, if you're familiar with those names. I recently, well, recently, I guess it's been 3 years now, but prior to my opening my own sort of boutique little operation, I was a senior vice president at the Irvine Company, which is arguably the largest developer in Southern California, where I was head of their community planning department and also was a part of doing feasibility analysis on probably 100 projects mostly in California for redevelopment. And so I come with a little bit of wearing two hats, that is a planning consultant and urban design consultant, but also as a developer working for a large scale development company, understanding development economics. I've taught for 20 years at the University of Southern California Master of Real Estate Development Department, teaching the integration of finance, market, and design. I've been fortunate to be invited to co-author 3 books with Urban Land Institute and Harvard University on large-scale new communities. I see this project as aligning nicely with that experience. I hope I can make a viable, valid contribution. I plan to try very hard to do so. Alan thought it might be a good idea for me to talk a little bit about what he's talked me into doing. And it's quite a bit, actually. I'm looking at this list and I'm kind of going, what have I done? I think of it as in kind of two tranches. The first being building the team and getting it programmed and scoped and contracted. And I think we're working on preliminary schedules right now, but that will probably take most of the rest of the year, you know, to do that. In doing that, I've got, you know, a number of components. You know, we're going to, you know, help you all have gone through visioning processes. There's a lot of work that's already been done on this. So the idea is to cull out the goals and objectives. I'm working on a planning process right now of what are the steps of going through the planning process, because you need to know that before you can go out for an RFQ or RFP, because you need to share that with your candidate consultants so they can respond. We will put together a list of candidate consultants, they will be drawn from the best in the country. We will then prepare an RFQ, which will then go out to that list. And then as a result of that RFQ, we will develop a short list and develop an RFP. We're discussing right now, how could we take what is normally a pretty dry and staid RFP process and make it a little bit more dynamic and forthcoming in terms of the thinking and the creativity of the consultants. And we're thinking at some type of, I hate to use the word competition, but think of that in broad terms, but not so much a design competition, because we don't want them to spend a lot of time and money designing something, because that's what we're going to be doing in the second stage of the work, but really a thought exercise based on key concepts that have already been developed and also are being developed by the working groups. And so we're thinking about organizing an RFP around that, in which case they will be challenged to come forth with some creative thoughts and innovation on those topics. So still defining that. We'll then, we'll have to develop an evaluation matrix for both the RFQ and RFP, and then do some scoring, and then make some recommendations on selection. There might be a final interview with the last couple. Of course, the last stage of that, they would be providing their fees, so we can get that side of the equation as well. Then the second tranche is just doing the work, is doing the master plan. Alan's trying to, he has an aspirational goal, which we will work hard to achieve of the middle of next year, of coming up with the plan. Now, we're having some thoughts about what it is, you know, what is that deliverable? And I think one of the things we're talking about is it not being a highly definitive, detailed plan where you see every building and so forth. But one of the things I've learned in working on a number of these things is
whatever you drawing down on that plan, probably something else was going to get built, because we have this thing called the market, and we have this thing called economic cycles, and we have this thing called cultural and demographic trending, and all those things converge into making it fairly hard to predict in a high level of detail out over a 5 or 10 year project. So we're thinking of it more as a bit of a framework plan that defines the character and good bones of the project, but also allows some flexibility. So as good deals come along and certain market forces shift, we can adopt without losing the integrity of the plan. So anyway, the pieces of that process will be, developing some guiding principles. I see those as different from the initial goals and objectives. Those objectives are really more about what the state's and landowners' goals and objectives are. The guiding principles really relate to the plan and the place. We would also then define our, to the degree there's a public participation process, we want to talk about that, define that, and outreach. I would be helping manage the design process of the various stages as it goes through. Providing planning and urban design guidance as we go through this process. And as we develop the different various deliverables, I will be helping make sure that those are on target with the goals and objectives. And then also, I will be coming back to you on a regular basis and giving you updates on the progress of that, of the overall planning design process. So that's a mouthful, but that's kind of those kinds of things I'm going to be assisting you on, and I'm sure other things will come forward as we move through this.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you for agreeing to say yes and come on board, and thank you also that after looking at Alan's list and his agenda that you didn't walk out as well.
You don't walk away from something like this,
So, Alan, you didn't know this was coming, but would you mind taking a few minutes and just comment on Steve, and then we'll open it up for any questions or comments from any of you.
Thanks, Representative, and we're really grateful to have Steve Kellenberg join our outstanding group of consultants. It's a terrific team. We've already started working together and communicating and aligning schedule, timing, products, etc. So I'm excited about it. He brings a wealth of experience, and I think it was important that he mentioned not just the planning background, but also the development background. We all know that while we want to do something cutting edge and exciting here, it's got to be rooted in market reality so it can get built, and developers won't just laugh and walk away, but instead enthusiastically want to be part of building out the vision. So grateful for all of our consultants who have been putting in tremendous time, great thought, and good products, and we'll hear more about that today and in coming months.
Thank you, Alan. Members of the board, Steve, Representative Handy.
Yeah, thank you very much. Steve Kellenberg, I'm just wondering, are you a solo consultant, or do you have a team of collaborators, or you can draw on others as needed?
Well, I'm at a stage in my career where I only work on things I want to work on. It's pretty low key.
Good for you.
Low key. And I'm solo, but I have a series of affiliations with other firms that I fall back on as needed. In this case, I am not the master planner, so I am actually on some other projects, and so I don't really feel the need for a lot of support on this. It's really using my brain cells and experience more than needing CAD or Illustrator or 3D modeling. That's what the consultants are going to do. So, I'm kind of a sole operator at this point, which is exactly the way I like it.
Yeah, that's just wanted to understand that better. That's great.
Thanks, Representative Handy. Any other comments or questions? Questions for Steve? Thanks again, Steve. We're fortunate to have you on board, and we really look forward to your assistance moving forward. And I just want to echo what Alan said, is And I've said to this to Alan and some of you that we really have assembled an outstanding team of consultants, and this is going to provide a wonderful foundation for what we're all wanting to see accomplished on this property, on this project. So thanks, Steve, for joining up. So with that, let's move on to the next item on our agenda. Speaking of consultants and being really fortunate to have the kind of folks we have, we'll turn the time to you. Before I do that, Aaron, we've really put Aaron through the traces in the last few weeks. She's really worked hard at trying to help us crystallize where we all anticipate this project going and what is the best structure and organization. And she's been, and her team have been helpful. And one of the reasons they've been so helpful is because of the breadth of their experience and seeing so many projects, working on so many, helping us to find the right structure to fit our needs. So Aaron, I hope you're okay with that. A little bit of introduction, we'll turn the time to you.
Thank you, Representative Snell. It was a great introduction, and another welcome to Steve, who has been a frequent RCLCO collaborator for many decades. So, our firms know each other well, and I think he's both been our client. We've been co-collaborators, and we've had other, we've been side by side, partners on projects. So, I think you've got a good person involved, and we'll all work well together. So let me pull up. Okay. Do you all have my screen?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. So, I think the topic for today is really to talk through, and share with you the findings from, the economic development and organizational strategy work that we've been doing over the last 2 months. And, for sure, the work is not done in the sense that this is, both of these are strategies. So they're going to be ever evolving, and they're going to evolve as we learn new things from potential partners. They're going to evolve as we get further into the master plan. They're going to evolve based on feedback from you all and feedback from the market, and, beginning to iterate between, these ideas and directions and, the underlying, financial returns or market opportunities within the business plan. And so, these are our recommendations today, which I think provide a clear direction on, how to move forward and some key questions for this group to continue thinking about. But it's by no means the end of the discussion or something that is so final that, we're going to close the book on this and we're never going to talk about this again, right? This is the beginning of, really a business plan is how I would frame it. And so, we're going to spend just a few minutes on, revisiting the economic development and the anchor strategy conversation that we've been having, largely around the idea of, is it viable to think that we could really build an innovation district here? And then we're going to spend the majority of our time on the organizational strategy and some key questions within that for you all. So on the topic of an innovation district, there are lots of, we've shared some of our examples of case studies and the different ways in which other people have gone about this, in the U.S. and elsewhere. And there are lots of places that have called themselves innovation districts that don't necessarily have the components that, really make and drive an economic development strategy that improves the opportunities at the site and improves the opportunities for people and businesses throughout the region. And our research, as well as, our early discussions, with Alan and with others in the region, suggests that creating an innovation district as part of the development at the point really is a realistic opportunity. And, the next step is really to figure out what the right anchors are, what the right partners are. And that's something that we can provide direction on, and we'll share with you what our thinking is there right now. But that will really unfold as we evaluate and discuss, options with people who might be those partners. And so there's really a couple of different strategies that we think are options here. And this is almost like, it's almost like a prioritization is how I would process it, right? It's the idea of, well, there's some ideas we like best and that maybe are the best fit or we think are the most viable and impactful today. You know, and those are the places to really focus your, focus our efforts and explore first. You know, and there's lots of other strategies underneath that if we decide that maybe that really isn't as viable as we thought it was, or there just isn't a partnership that's going to make it exciting for us, also will help us create the type of, innovation, economic and social benefits for the region, the state that you all are looking for. And I should say that we've started these working groups, which I think we'll hear more from those chairs later. And the education innovation group is probably going to be really valuable for us to begin to explore some of these ideas with. You know, we've taken the case studies that we put together and really thought through how to draw out themes. You know, if you're really going to boil it down to what was one of the driving ideas or driving principles. And, largely they have, a university driver, an industry driver, a medical driver, or kind of another key, catalyst or organization. And at the end of the day, most innovation districts are a combination of all of these things. So it's kind of a question of what was the initial catalyst or idea or the initial seed, that really drove the planning and drove the build out of the rest of the anchors. And, when we look at how to prioritize those options at your site, the one that rises to the top based on all of our discussions, with you all as a board and with others is the idea that there really could be an opportunity to build around this industry focus. And that wouldn't exclude the idea of there being major educational or other research anchors, but it would say, let's start with the question of what industry do we want to grow and where could we really find a major, catalyst on the business side and build out around that, as opposed to starting with, a question of, a university wants to open a new architecture school and we could put that here, so could we build all the pieces around that? And so we've really evaluated these ideas in this framework of viability, impact, which you could also think of as return on investment, and, a broad brush at, what would be the cost to initiate that. I think the one that's really worth calling out, if you're kind of skimming on this list, is the idea that, we've heard from some people that we should really let's just go find some corporate tenants, big businesses will help us and we'll call it a day. And I think that's a very viable strategy. But the overall impact may not be as great as some of the other, options that are on the table. And so we would suggest prioritizing, trying to pursue some of those options before we, decide that, a business park and a primarily corporate focus is the best option for this site. And so our next steps are, as I was describing, to continue to flesh out these strategies within the realm of potential options to test their viability and the interest from, those potential partners. We have some ideas from our research and from the working groups on what some of those industry focuses might be. We've heard biotech very clearly. We've heard, climate, renewables, environmental science. We've also heard artificial intelligence, and places that really are focused on that overlap between high tech and other industries. Which would also include things like smart cities. We've heard pretty clearly that there might be an option out there for medical research, focusing on clinical trials and bringing together, a major medical element with the biotech industry. We don't want to rule out the idea of a university expansion or a research consortium. Both of those might be components of these other strategies. And, there could be an interesting, combined campus idea for university that, that we haven't seen yet that really would be very, super exciting. But I think from the discussion so far, these first four pieces are really the places that, we would probably recommend focusing our efforts and, Alan's efforts as we just get further into discussions and see, what might really be viable and where the interest lies. So before we transition to the organizational strategy questions, which is almost kind of a separate and parallel topic, are there any you know, questions or comments on the Innovation District side?
Aaron, not a comment on the content, but at least I can just see your opening title slide. I haven't been able to see
it since
you've advanced them.
That is not good.
There we go.
Hold on. Can you guys see me advancing it now?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Well, this presentation is far less helpful when you don't, when only I can see the slides. I don't think we need to go back through that significantly, but you know, this slide might be helpful for people to have the visual of what I was describing of the prioritization. You know, so this is where we really said, you know, how would we think through these potential strategies of an industry focus, you know, medical research, university, your business park, in that framework of viability, impact, and cost. Okay. Well, hearing no questions or comments, I'll go ahead and flip the slide. Just checking we're all following, right? We now have the slide that's organizational path forward.
Aaron?
Yes.
This represents Snow. If you could go back the slide before you touched on this and on the next steps, and maybe I'm getting ahead, but is your next part of your presentation, how do you test viability and interest? How is this accomplished? Because the viability is kind of an unknown out there when we're talking about some of these cutting edge type technologies. Am I getting ahead of your presentation?
No, I think this is the right place to talk about that. You know, testing the viability looks like a lot of different things. You know, it starts with conversations with industry leaders and potential anchors, you know, companies, right? Talking to people within the biotech space and understanding what they think their industry needs to grow and you know, then pursuing those potential, you know, groups, whether that's a, you know, one of the things we've heard very clearly is having a clinical trial, you know, abilities within the state would really allow for medical device and pharmaceutical companies to expand their businesses here. And so testing the viability of something like that would mean, you know, talking to, you know, groups that would potentially run a hospital with clinical research functions, whether that's somebody like the University of Utah or a different private hospital system or, you know, a group like the Mayo Clinic who might operate a satellite location. You know, for other pieces, it maybe is more straightforward, you know, and there's an academic and research component at one or more universities that could be brought together and, you know, and really execute it on site where that research, you know, those faculty, you know, the PhD students, you know, the research and the companies working with that research are all co-located. And so the question is understanding from the different local universities who might be participants in that and really driving that process, you know, is there an interest, you know, and really a desire to move forward with something like that? And you know, I'll let Alan chime in, but those are conversations that have, you know, started at a very high level with some of the working group members and other, you know, university representatives who have started to express interest in the site.
Thank you.
Okay. Hearing no additional questions. We'll kind of change gears for a second. So the other, you know, piece that we've shared with you, you know, in our past meetings, as well as in some of these smaller, working group meetings outside of board meetings, is it really about thinking about what the role of POMSLA as an organization is going to be in this development? And how can POMSLA move forward the goals set forward in its enabling legislation, by pursuing real estate development on site? And, what we've learned through conversations with you all, and measuring that against what we know and what we've learned from case studies of organizations with, that were executing similar types of real estate development, is that there is no perfect match for you all as an organization and the site and your development goals. And so we pulled the best of all of these different, pieces together to make some recommendations around to capture the value today and, wring our hands of it and move on. We would add to that based on our, our understanding of what makes these types of developments successful, and how to achieve your goals, is that, POMSLA's role is to take the lead on activities, when the public sector can create greater social and economic impact than the private sector. And some of those things would be, the creation of a master planning framework, right? You all can create greater impact, that helps maximize the goals that you've looked at by doing that yourself, with a consultant, rather than, pulling a developer in today and saying, well, why don't you go create a master planning framework? Another piece on that list is what we were just talking about, which is, that partnership strategy of really trying to feed an innovation district. And, the other key piece on this list, is regional and district-wide infrastructure planning and delivery. So that doesn't necessarily tell you who's funding it, but in terms of saying we really need a major arterial road through this site and it ought to go here, or this is how the transit system is going to function in relationship to the site, that's a role that POMSLA should be playing, more so than the developer. And, within that context, I just described the things you should be doing. We also see very clearly that there is an ideal structure where you all limit the internal responsibilities of the POMSLA team, while ensuring that the organization has the expertise to execute its approach to development. And we'll talk a little bit, over the next several slides about what that approach might look like. But what we've heard, I think, loudest is that you are not a developer, you don't intend to become a developer, and your ideal transaction is that you find some capable and quality partners to help you execute it. And then it remains CBD, whether that's one partner, two partners, and how the organization interacts with those partners. And we framed this, I think you all may have seen this slide last time, but it's the easiest framework to describe, what the organization should be doing. And, there's a variety of options on what role you might play within this context of control, cost, and risk. And, on this left side would be, POMSLA moving closer to being a developer itself, right? Really, considering building some buildings, certainly building a lot of infrastructure, and trying to make parcel by parcel decisions about what happens. The far right side of this matrix is essentially setting up a master plan, or even a master plan framework, and finding one partner, who really will be responsible for executing and making all of the future decisions about exactly how to develop the land within the parameters that you set forward. And as long as they're staying within those parameters, you don't really have any control over whether you like or don't like what they're up to. And, the place that I think we found some consensus from this group, as well as, we think it offers you the greatest amount of success, is really to live in this middle ground where you have one or more development partners, in a master developer role, and you maintain some control, but really are not responsible for execution. And that plays out, in the sense that, you probably remain the landowner, although some portions of the site could change ownership over time, right? Whether you're doing a really long-term lease, ground lease, you know, whether you're a partner within some of the developments, whether, you know, there's a different form of structured participation, you know, or you decide to sell some pieces of land. You know, you probably share a little bit of this role of land developer. And that's probably really where the complication, I think, you know, and the decision making will come over time as you start to think about the master plan as well as potential development partners. You know, if a master developer is going to play this entire role, right, you say, here's a plan, you know, go build the infrastructure when it makes sense, you know, go start wherever you feel like, and, you know, maybe here's a pot of money as a contribution to build some major roads that we care about, but, you know, build them according to our standards and, you know, we're going to stay out of your way. You know, most likely there's going to be a combination of Pambla and a master development partner, you know, doing pieces with this, right? You know, there's major road and transit projects that matter for the region, you know, that are going to come through the site and where the state and the regional entities probably do want to have a larger role in building and executing those pieces. And there's lots of components in here where you all don't need to be building them and you don't need to be funding them. You know, another land developer should be funding them. And then, you know, there's probably multiple partners, you know, whether it's your master developer building some of the buildings or other people that they would transact with, you know, that become active on the site, but that don't have a direct relationship to you all. So exploring exactly how this middle piece works is really, I think, the meat of the question going forward. And it's not a decision that you need to make today, but it's a decision we'll be revisiting and framing a lot of future ideas in the context of. In the sense that if you go one direction, it may close off or enable certain options for you. And there becomes a question of, from that model, how do you think about who you need to be internally? And we often describe that in the sense of both who bears the responsibility and has the expertise for the strategy. You know, not necessarily who's putting the shovels in the ground or who's funding it, but who's making the decisions about what happens. And where's the balance of cost and value between you and your development partners? And you know, you can think about a little bit within this matrix of fewer responsibilities, you know, within in-house, you know, within your organization, you know, more responsibilities, you know, single partner, right? There'll be that one single master development partner and multiple partners. And there's examples of almost all of these in similar organizations and similar sites. So there isn't necessarily a right answer universally. There's a question of a right answer situationally and for you all. And, you know, what we would really say is that, you know, this box on the bottom right where you have one partner but you do a lot in-house, that one does not make sense in this case. You know, the cost and the value proposition are out of whack in the sense that you're going to do a lot and then you're going to, you know, partner with one group, you know, you're almost paying them to execute your vision, you know, which doesn't necessarily maximize the state's return and doesn't really incentivize the developer to drive value within the project. You know, it kind of negates the purpose of having one partner. You know, I'd also say that having multiple partners and, you know, more real estate responsibilities, in this case, it's unnecessary, right? This is a good strategy when you really need to build a market. So this is, if you remember the St. Louis and Cortex example we've talked about previously, where they really needed to build an interest in a market for the private sector to be in that location. You know, they really live in this green box. And, you know, you all know the site in the region well. We don't need to build developer interest. You know, what we need to do is guide what happens, you know, and how we use the market to achieve some broader goals. And so, you know, with that context, we've really gone into detail on what we described as kind of two possible options. You know, one is a more conservative approach, which says we should have fewer responsibilities in-house and find one partner to help us execute. You know, and a more proactive approach, you know, within this context of who makes the strategic decisions, you know, really suggests that maybe you might have multiple development partners and more expertise in-house to drive that decision-making. There really isn't a right answer here, you know, in terms of, you know, this is the way that you maximize, you know, achieving your goals and maximize, you know, the value that you create from the site. There's really a weighing of benefits and drawbacks and risks. And, you know, the conservative approach, I think, sometimes gets, having one massive development partner, because it limits private sector competition, and, you know, it potentially limits the value you create on things, right? You know, you kind of have a defined relationship with that partner, and, you know, they know that they control the market. But what the benefits are is really that they provide the expertise and the decision making, and they have a very concentrated risk and reward, in the sense that they know that the decisions they make and the way they execute, you know, come back to bear on their bottom line. And so they're incentivized to make sure that they're, you know, they're both achieving your goals, but also, you know, utilizing the market in the best way possible. You know, this more proactive approach where you might end up with multiple development partners, you know, the benefit and I think the attractiveness of the strategy is that people think it brings additional financial upside, you know, as well as it maintains more control for you all over strategic decisions. It does create more competition, right? You know, there's more opportunities for you to say, okay, we're going to move on to this next, you know, 40-acre piece that we identified as a mixed-use site. You know, let's go see who can really execute that development and who's interested, and, you know, they'll be working on that site for the next few years, and, you know, maybe there's another piece that's mostly an office or mostly a corporate campus that could also be happening at the same time. And you don't need to have the same partner executing those. But in the proactive approach, Hounslow would be responsible for deciding when to pursue those different opportunities, how to select the partners, and how to structure the transaction. In the conservative approach, you might take that same plan where you have a mixed-use piece and a corporate campus piece, and the master developer is going to be responsible for executing those decisions. Within the context and the approval structure that you set up within your agreement. So you don't have no control, but as long as the developer is performing within the bounds of what you all set up, you know, you're not going to be able to jump in and say, hey, wait a minute, like, why aren't you doing that? You know, the real drawback on the proactive approach is that, you know, you really are more exposed. You know, here I've measured it as political risk, but, you know, you need very, very strong leadership. You need a very consistently applied expertise in-house, and you need an organization that can be a little bit insulated to like political risk and changing winds and desires of the legislature and the state overall, right? You know, when you have a massive development agreement set up, you don't really renegotiate that unless one partner isn't performing. You know, you or the development partner. In this proactive approach, you are at risk that you get you come up with a couple partners, you really get going, you've got a couple things happening, and then, you know, maybe there's community backlash, right? Maybe we haven't done a good enough job of mitigating the traffic impact. And suddenly it becomes a lot more difficult to move forward with that next piece of development. Or there's a lot more pushback. You know, the community, you know, wants to say you aren't achieving, you know, what was asked for, or, as you advance with something like an innovation campus, it just becomes more difficult to get, you know, state funding to, you know, for, you know, a university piece that's critical to the project. And if you set it up, you know, in the conservative approach, some of those things are structured up front, or the private sector partner has to be going to negotiate them. So it kind of mitigates that and buffers, just those shifting pieces. So before, I'm going to jump in a second to what that looks like internally for you all, but are there questions on kind of the differences in these, and what I'm describing as these two approaches before we move forward? It's a lot to think about, I know. Okay. Well, we'll have plenty of time for additional questions if people want to jump in later, but I just didn't want to leave anyone hanging. You know, so how you proceed on one of these approaches does have implications for your internal structure. You know, either way, you're going to need some full-time staff and, you know, really an executive or an investment committee to help make decisions. But the size of that team and the level of expertise, you know, that those people need to have, you know, is going to be different depending on this conservative versus proactive approach. you know, eventually when you're really, you know, up and running and full time on implementation of the plan, you know, with a partner, you know, you might have a full time real estate staff that includes, you know, more than Alan, right? They'll also have a head of real estate, you know, and sometimes it's also a, you know, head of planning or a head of real estate and planning. You know, you'll have some project managers who really are responsible for, you know, executing and, you know, communicating with your development partner on a day-to-day basis. And maybe you'll have some analysts and admin who are really, you know, helping do some of those tasks, depending on, you know, just how, you know, how much experience that head of real estate brings within the proactive approach. You know, you're going to be finding a fairly seasoned and experienced executive in the proactive approach who really knows how to make those decisions. Whereas in the conservative approach, you know, that person is really focusing on managing the master developer, you know, and working with them, but the level of expertise and experience that's needed is probably less. I think the most important part of what we've seen elsewhere and what we would recommend to you all is you really need a decision-making body in addition to the current board of directors. And, you know, we would recommend that over time, the group that we have here today really transforms into thinking about themselves as a governance board. You know, right? Your job is to make sure that all of this activity is, you know, progressing according to the mission, you know, and in the best interest of the state. And that group probably looks very similar to, you know, to who's on the call today and others that might transition in or out of this group in the future. But what we should be doing is taking some of the detailed decision making, you know, off of your plate. And I'll describe an example of that in a second. You know, but that detailed day-to-day and week-to-week execution needs to live with a group that, you know, for now we've called it an investment committee. You could call it an executive committee. You know, there's, you know, a number of different ways that you could frame this. But really, it's probably 3 to 5 members. You know, it's going to be your executive director, your head of real estate, probably a local public sector agency official. I would say, based on what I know today, maybe that's the City of Draper's community development director. You know, somebody who really is responsible to the local jurisdictions, you know, related to, you know, some of the land use and planning decisions that would be discussed within this group. And it probably includes some additional, you know, development planning or finance expertise. And the critical challenge for this group is going to be managing conflicts of interest up front for some of those outside groups. Just to dig into that investment committee, like this group is who is going to be in the weeds on strategic decisions. You know, they're going to set guidelines for how the real estate staff operates, what they can do on their own, what needs approval of the committee. They're really going to lead strategic decision making on partnership negotiations. You know, and bring before the you know, governance board, you know, what the recommendation is, right? We made this decision and are asking for your blessing, you know, before we make this change. And so I think an example here is really helpful. You know, we would say an example would be if a development partner wanted to change an important element of a part of the plan, right? We have a good framework in place and, you know, they've actually found an anchor tenant that is really exciting to everybody, but they want us to change something that we all thought was an important element of the proposed street layout. And, you know, that group, you know, that's not necessarily a nitty gritty discussion that we're going to be able to have with this group, right? That's a nitty gritty discussion that this investment committee is going to have with the development partner and with that corporate tenant to work through all those details and figure out, you know, whether they recommend, you know, moving forward with those changes, you know, because this potential tenant is important enough. And so that's kind of where this group really functions, right? It's really to work through, you know, those details and to make and lead the strategic decision making around, you know, how to proceed with the master plan. And so I'll open it up for discussion in a second. You know, really the implementation of your internal organizational strategy, you know, it may not be that different in the short term, depending on which of these proactive versus conservative, you know, strategies you pursue. you know, in an ideal world, I would recommend that you begin to put that investment committee together next spring during master planning so that they can really be in the weeds with the master planners to, you know, help make decisions and work through details and drive that planning process. You know, and that there's, you know, probably a couple of years over which you build up a full team, you know, based on how quickly you begin to think of, to get to the implementation of the master plan. And, you know, if you take away one thing from this, you know, take away this, I think that we should make these decisions within the context of, you know, a business plan for the organization, right? All of these people, you know, big team, small team, you know, one partner, multiple partners, you know, changes the context of cost and return on investment, right? It changes your staffing and your operational costs, changes the investment in master planning, infrastructure, you know, and other, you know, anchors and catalysts and things you might do on site yourself or have a partner do. And, you know, in some ways it changes how you realize the revenues generated from real estate activity. So there isn't necessarily a correct approach here, but, you know, I think that while we're talking about things that probably have cost implications in the short term, you know, the way to think about them and evaluate them is within the context of, you know, a business plan and, you know, the return on investment going forward. So, you know, with that, I know that we've listed this as action, and, you know, if anybody would like to propose action, I think we're open to that, but for now, I'm just going to open for questions and discussion.
Questions from the board? We're Aaron.
This is April. Aaron, can you share this slideshow presentation so I can go back and read a whole bunch of them? Because I think I may have a couple more questions for you and the board, but they're not coming to the forefront right now because I'm kind of just trying to learn about and mesh everything that you've just talked about.
Of course. And we have a longer, kind of more readable, like detailed readable document that will circulate to this group as well that has some additional context.
Other questions?
Oh, and this is April again. So just so the other board members know, Aaron mentioned something about that we could take some action. And although it's hard to see like the months go by and this take a long time, I think it'd be good if we all kind of studied this out. But I like it in theory, that there's a head of real estate, that there's an investment committee working with Alan at the head of that. Because I still first see us as board members in that same role as Aaron said, just governance and once or twice a month meeting, while these other people will just be day to day. They'll be in the thick of it. Then it's just going to be a matter of to what level do we let them approve if somebody wants to bring in a sports arena, if somebody wants to bring in, you know, 50-story high-rises, like to what level does that group actually get to approve it? Or do we still want a certain amount of decision-making to roll up to the governing board?
Mm-hmm. Aaron, maybe while some of the others are thinking, this investment committee or investment team, I see that, or I think what you're describing is a fairly high level of, when you talk about in the weeds, high level of expertise in marketing and developing, who really understand the issues in that, rather than, and no offense is intended here, but the governing board some extent possesses some of that, but we're talking about a real intensive effort on the part of this group that has the background, the expertise to really help move this plan forward. Am I right about that?
Yes.
And have you seen in this diagram that you had, have you seen this structure in other projects like this work and be helpful to the governing board?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some form of this investment committee or executive committee group. For almost all of the organizations we've looked at that have executed this type of development.
I suspect, and when you talk about the two polar opposites, so not opposites, but differences between the conservative approach and the proactive approach, one of the risks under the proactive is the risks, the political risks. Mm-hmm. And I suppose one of the ways that we help mitigate some of that is with this kind of well-formed investment group that helps us stay on track. Am I right about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the investment group can really, I think being in the weeds on the decision-making is the easiest, shorthand. They can both find the places and highlight the places that are going to be politically challenging. And for you all, it takes some of that day-to-day piece out of the governance role. So it separates the political from the leadership and oversight from the execution just a little bit. But I think and you all obviously probably have more thoughts on the political risk side and more specific thoughts than I do. But, there is a risk, and there's examples of projects, across the country where, there's been strong support and you get partway into it and they decided to take the more proactive approach and, the winds changed, right? It was harder to get funding. It was harder to execute according to the strategy or the community really, pushed for a change. And I think that would still be a challenge for these two groups to navigate, regardless of, whether we structure them the way that we've outlined or not, because in that proactive approach, you're opening yourselves up to both more ongoing decision-making and more ongoing feedback and criticism.
Can I be so bold as to make a comment?
Certainly.
Go for it, please.
I've had the opportunity, in our region, we've had two major military bases that have bracked out and gone private, and each one of them represents respectively each of these two models. I mean, I think you know what I tried to say. I'm not gonna make a recommendation, it's my pay grade, but I would, observations of watching these projects. One's the El Toro Marine Base, one's the Tustin Air Naval Base. And the El Toro Air Base went with the more conservative role, where they brought in one entity, a master developer, to basically, develop most of the project. And and the downside of that, as I observe it over the last couple of decades, is that once you kind of get in bed, with a single entity, it's hard to get out sometimes, unless you build in a mechanism. But and there have been over the years times when there was quite a bit of conflict between the two. The good news was the single entity could be quite efficient in what they were doing. The bad news was that it was hard to sometimes control what they were doing. On the other hand, the Tustin Air Base, the city decided they wanted to kind of play the master developer role and sort of do segments to other co-developers, if you will, or single developers and builders. And the problem with that was they had ended up getting locked up and had a hard time because of politics and because of sort of the lack of expertise within the staff of making timely decisions and really moving the project forward. And so the first example I gave has moved along much faster than the second one, which has struggled because of the indecision and political, complexity that they had to deal with. Now, having said that, neither one of them are organized in the manner that Aaron is proposing. Neither one of them have an executive middle level decision-making board of real estate experts that can make
informed, well-educated strategic decisions in the interest of the project. And I think that that sort of interim layer in both of these cases would have really made a big difference and helped each of them be more effective. And just the last thing I want to say on the benefit of the multiple, the more aggressive, proactive approach is that by the fact that you're really dealing with multiple developers rather than just one single one, is you have that freedom to change the horses in the stable. Now, the ones that work the best get more moving forward. The ones that don't work out don't get invited, you know, to the next sector or the next phase. And they know that. And so it gives them a motivation to perform at a very high level for you.
This is April. Thank you, Stephen. When you said that they kind of get rated and motivated if they're going to be invited to the next phase, I wanted to let you guys know, for the last 10 years, my company, since we've sold so much real estate, and one of our divisions really focuses on federal real estate, that's what actually the Department of Housing did. So the Department of Housing, or HUD, they have a lot of single family homes, like foreclosures. They get about 100,000 properties a year. It's a very complex process of making sure that we have appraisers that are independent so that we have some valuation and then be able to go market it. And the different, Alpine, my company, is an asset management company, but the different asset management companies that they gave those states to and awards, that's exactly what they did. They gave everybody like about the same amount of inventory to start with. And then depending on how sales went, how clean the contracts were, that the money was remitted to the U.S. Treasury, that all of our auditing was found to be proper, then they would distribute the inventory based on ratings and how the different asset management companies were doing. So that's a really interesting idea that Stephen mentioned, where if the whole thing doesn't get developed at once, then you're inviting these developers to really showcase that they've done a good job. And then really we're counting on this little investment committee with Alan and the head of real estate and the people to make sure there's not a whole bunch of just backroom dealing, or not, I shouldn't say not a whole bunch, no backroom dealing, since this is state property, and that really everything's transparent and there's not a bunch of conflicts of interest either. I think that's another thing that you could kind of get stuck with if you only had one single developer in there, that they may just have certain relationships that they work with going forward.
Mm-hmm. Representative Snow, you're on mute.
Can't hear you, Larry.
I'm sorry. Let me just remind the group, managing our time here a little bit, we try to keep our meetings to an hour and a half, and we can go over a little bit if we have to. And Aaron, I apologize, I'm always feel like I'm cutting your time short a little bit. This is such a critical discussion, but let me tell you, my impression is that we're narrowing it, Aaron and board members. I think we're closing in on it. I'm not certain, and maybe I'm saying too much as chair, that we're ready to make a decision here and take action today, but I would like to see this back on the agenda and carve out, Alan, if we can, a little more time in our next meeting and see if we can't zero in and put some detail on what our organization concept should be. What do you all, anyone care to weigh in on that thought that I'm making here?
Yeah, I'd like to see those slides that Aaron has provided to us. It's quite an in-depth study, but I couldn't take any action today. Yeah, if that was even on the table, I'm not sure it was.
This is Dawn. I would appreciate that opportunity as well, just to look a little more in-depth into those slides. Aaron, it's great information, and I appreciate it. I just like to read over it. And I just want to make sure, you know, I have the opportunity to serve on some organizations are a little different than others. And there are some where the governing board seems more like a rubber stamp than anything else. And I just don't want to be that. I don't want us to turn into that we are just a rubber stamp for, okay, great, whatever y'all are doing, that's great, you know, and just a rubber stamp. I appreciate the opportunity to have a vested interest in this, but I like what you've put together and would love to talk about it more next time. I'd just like to look through this more as well, help digest it a little better along with everyone else. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor, and thanks, Representative Handy. Any other comments? April?
I have, Alan, what kind of, I imagine there's people that are reaching out to you. I mean, your name's been put out there and we're letting people know that you're the executive director. What type of developers are you hearing from nationwide? Are you just hearing from local and regional developers? Are you hearing from residential developers, commercial, multifamily, those that do both? I'm just curious as to who's reaching out to you, because I know this is on a lot of people's radar.
And surprisingly, I haven't heard from very many developers, one or two nationally, one or two locally, but just very high level, what's going on. I think that there's a lot of interest out there, but they're waiting to kind of see what happens with some of our more public steps, the planning, et cetera. So, direct answer to your question is I'm not getting a lot of calls from developers.
Okay, I appreciate that, because I think it's good if we all kind of know, like, who's already trained to position. And I'm not even saying that's bad if they're reaching out. It'd be remiss on some of these companies if they're not trying to find out what's going on with that land. But it'd be nice for us as a board to know when people are contacting you so that we see, oh, you know, these people have regularly put in interest for the last couple of years, or they've come along and now shown us some projects they've done and they've been successful. It'd also be nice to hear from Steve, and it was really great that you gave two examples of previous government-owned land that then became, but maybe if you gave us some private sector examples too, or share some developments that you've seen be really successful, that'll help us go down the line too.
Sure. Well, Aaron and I can talk about that. I mean, the paradigm here is, though, a public entity trying to develop, you know, jointly, a private partnership. You know, most of the most successful private projects, you know, tend to have a master developer, you know, that is developing it and making day-to-day decisions with a huge, highly accomplished, you know, experienced staff. So Aaron and I can talk about that, but I think most of your comps are going to be, you know, public sector. And the old redevelopment agency, you know, history of redevelopment projects that go back decades. You know, how did the most successful redevelopment agencies, how did they get their work done? Would be another sort of focus.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Steve. And April, great comments. I'm going to suggest something. This isn't a motion per se. I'm going to throw this out and see if the group has any concerns about this. I'm going to ask Alan, if you wouldn't mind, our director, to work with Aaron and Steve and see if our next meeting you couldn't bring two or three organizational concepts, more detailed, more defined and refined, taking into account what you're hearing and what you sense is the group's interest, without locking in any of us, and bring more definition to this discussion the way I think that we're going, and allow us to look at those be ready, I think, maybe a little further ahead to make that organizational structure decision. Is that fair to everyone? Does anyone have a problem with that course? Steve, that's a thumbs up.
Yeah, that sounds fine to me.
Thank you. Alan, are you willing to take that on with your team?
Of course. Yeah, I think that's an appropriate direction for us to kind of narrow the field based on what we've heard and set aside time for a robust discussion after everybody's had a chance to digest it for a while.
Thank Thank you. And Aaron, I think one of the slides that was really helpful to me was the one where you actually put the street detail of who would actually be on the investment committee. I know those are just your suggestions, but that's the kind of, I think, detail that would help our board move forward and look at a structure that makes sense. My sense is, and I hesitate to say this because the chair should be quiet, but my sense is we want some middle ground. We don't want to be developers, but we don't want to just find one master developer and turn it over to them and sit back and cross our fingers and hope that it goes the way that we anticipate. And that's a bit of a challenge finding that, but I think in Utah, we're good at collaborating. We're good at finding the talent to accomplish those kinds of things. So unless anyone objects, we'll thank Aaron and we'll move on with the next item. But Aaron, we will be inviting you and Steve and our team back next meeting.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Snow. And I think that you'll find some of those additional details in the longer document. You know, we might have spent 2 or 3 hours on this if we've gone through them today, but we'll build on them with Steve and with Alan for the next meeting.
Thank you. And I think many people or many members have indicated an interest in looking at your slides, and if you'd be willing to share those with Alan and he can distribute, I think that would be helpful.
Yes, I will.
Thank you. So with that, Muriel, you've been patient. One of the areas that we've really been hard at work is on working with our marketing team and our communications team. So Muriel, without further introductions, thank you for all you've done and your team. It's been fun working with you, and we'll just turn the time and let you direct our next discussion.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Representative Snow. It has similarly been just really fun for our team. You guys will recognize this logo. You approved it a couple weeks ago and allowed us to hit the ground running, and we haven't stopped running since. So we're really excited. We now have the name, the logo. Just so you guys are aware, we are working on brand guidelines, usage standards for our logo, particularly given the fact that, you know, over time there will be our development partners that may want to use our branding. There will be the local surrounding communities that will want to talk about what we're doing. We want to make sure that we have those brand guidelines set and clearly articulated so that, you know, our brand and logo is being used appropriately over time. So we're working on that. We are also working with Alan in developing out some templates, PowerPoint templates, letterhead, envelopes, business cards, email signatures, just kind of par for the course templates that you would expect that come with the entity. So we're excited that things are getting set up. I wanted to talk briefly, I recognize we're at time, so I'll try and be brief, about our public rollout. We do anticipate here in about a month being able to roll out kind of to the public who we are, what we're doing. Just, you know, I know you all know so well, you know, the board was created through legislation in 2018. And of course, you've been working hard over the past 2 years to build the foundational aspects of the entity. But the public hasn't heard from us in a while. So we want to kind of make a big splash. And I do want to talk a little bit about that. So I want to turn first to a draft video. I want to thank a few of our interviewees of the video, Representative Snow, Alan, Lieutenant Governor Cox, and Teresa Foxley, who is, as you probably know, the president and CEO of EDC Utah and a member of our Economic Development Working Group. We were able to interview them as we put together a 3 to 4 minute video about who we are. This is a draft, but I wanted to show you, and I will caveat this with the fact, with saying that the interviewees haven't seen this yet, so I hope it's okay to show this. Representative Snow, I can't see your face because I'm sharing my screen, but is it okay if I share this video with the group real quick?
I'm smiling. We'll see how it plays out, and then you and I will visit later. So
I've seen it. You have nothing to worry about.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
people in the state know that the existing correctional facility at the point of the mountain is going to be moved, which means that this land is going to be available for development. That area will be known as the Point.
The new prison is expected to be completed in mid-2022. At that point, we'll start looking at demolition of the site preparation before development.
There's really not much like this anywhere in the world, where you have 700 acres located in a densely populated area in the heart of Silicon Slopes. This is unlike anything we've seen in the history of the state of Utah, and a rare opportunity in the United States or anywhere.
We have one of the most vibrant technology scenes in the country, maybe even the world. The epicenter of Utah's Silicon Slopes is really at that prison site. And so we'll have the opportunity to have this blank slate that can be programmed to help accelerate additional growth, additional opportunity, so that we can see a major campus form there, a campus that's environmentally sustainable, that is focused and centered around research and innovation, that is a job center, that allows people who live and work in the site to access the beautiful outdoors that we have here in the state of Utah.
Our approach has been to think big. The Point will be impressive. This will be a unique place for innovation, for technology, for research, and vibrant growth with an eye towards quality of life, transportation, air quality.
This will be a place that is not just about corporations or buildings. It's about community. It's about people. There'll be some residential and commercial. Certainly, I think it's important to have recreation and open space.
We want to make sure that future generations look back on what we did here and they can be proud of those decisions, making sure that it doesn't impact traffic negatively, that it doesn't impact air quality negatively, that this can actually be a model for future development so that we can add people without lowering the quality of life and diminishing what makes the state the best place to live, work, and play.
The reality is that we're not going to be able to stop growth, but we can grow in ways that preserve what we value most. That's our commitment to this site.
The people of Utah want this to be a very sustainable development that draws on the best technology. It could be a showcase piece for our entire country. It will create new educational opportunities, new employment opportunities, and it will only enhance the quality of life here.
We don't have a plan for this site yet. We want it to be open to the public so they can see what we're doing and have input into the process. Tell us what works, what doesn't, how we can improve it.
The dream is that this will be something that is unique and something that every Utah can be proud of. We would rather be right than fast on this project. The citizens are part of this decision-making process. It's not just the governor or the legislature. It really is everyone working together to make this the best project it can possibly be, to show the world that that entrepreneurial spirit, that Utah people coming together, still exists. And it's something we're very proud of and can't wait to complete.
Okay, perfect. I'll stop there for just a second to get any initial reactions. If you have any that you want to share. If not, I'll just briefly show you the website, and I think that'll button up my update for this meeting.
That's very good. You're right on.
Yeah, it was good.
I really liked it. I think it's fantastic. And I'm glad that you included Teresa. I think that was wise too, but well done. And all of you, Lowry, Alan, excellent. Well done. You look great. Yeah. Oh, well done, Muriel. It's great.
Oh, thank you. They made our job easy. Was there one more person that wanted to say something?
Oh, this was Val. I just said I second everything that's been said.
So, Muriel, great work at making us look better than we are, you know, and Val, I have to ask you, this probably could be something really helpful in your recruiting efforts, I have to believe.
Yes, absolutely. This will be great. We'd love to show this. Anytime we get around site selectors or when people come in on site visits, we would love to show this. So we probably need to make sure that Teresa has it. She would be the one that would probably get the most use out of it as they take companies around and show them the area.
You're right, Val. And sometimes I'm part of that group that mixes up the missions, but GOED is certainly a part of that, but EDCU would be a terrific tool, no doubt.
We ought to put this on our website, the state GOED's website. We can have it on the website and a link to it. I think it's going to be really important to have something like this so people can see it.
Perfect. Yeah, that's great. And really encouraging to hear. We're happy to share it with, you know, whoever would like it and is able to use it. Teresa's team had similarly expressed an interest once we have it finalized so that they can share it with site selectors and things. So hopefully we can get a lot of bandwidth out of it. Okay, you've seen the stage site before. What we do intend once the video is final is to put it front and center on the homepage. So the scroll banner is a placeholder for now. And then when we have the final video, we will add it here. And then of course we can always go back to a scrolling format in the future. About, we've added Steve to the team. Welcome, Steve. Board meetings, I won't go through every single page, but I did want to note two things on the public meetings tab, since this will be the central repository for all things related to our public meetings. So for the board meetings, we have listed upcoming meetings. We have a calendar where those meetings will be posted as well. We have as well here for any interested member of the public. No one can say that we're not making these materials available, because of course they've been available via the Utah Public Notice website. We also have them available here. So all meeting materials from the past 2 years are available now on our website. We also have, for the working groups, we've set up the capability so that every single working group meeting can be live streamed via the Points YouTube channel. All of those materials are made available. All working group members' headshots and brief bios are represented here on our website. So you'll see, for example, I'm just using the stakeholder working group as an example, we have the agenda posted, the materials on the Points YouTube channel. This is the presentation that Alan gave, as well as the meeting recording for anyone who's interested in going back to the actual meeting and listening to the entire thing. And then, of course, notes. And we just intentionally dubbed these notes, not meetings, because while we are treating these like public meetings, these aren't official public meetings where we need to take minutes. But we did want to make sure that we're capturing notes and the key takeaways from every single working group meeting and making those available to the public. So again, all of these materials are available on our website for every working group meeting, every board meeting, and the capability is there via our live, our YouTube channel, to have live streaming of every single working group meeting as well, so that the public can participate. In terms of our public rollout, just very briefly, let me stop sharing my screen for a minute. Okay, so again, just high level, we're looking at potentially Monday, September 14th, doing a press conference at the correctional facility site itself. We think that, again, it's been a couple years since the public has heard about what we're doing. We want to make sure that we are getting out there in the public sphere and that folks have a good idea of this transition from visioning through the Point of the Mountain Development Commission and their work from the past several years now towards planning and then in the future implementation. So we think an on-site press conference would be a very great way to literally and figuratively ground this in reality for the public. We of course want to make several of you available to the two reporters to field questions, but also to speak at the press conference. We think that a great way of approaching this with media outlets is essentially the fact that we've just hired a world-renowned planning coordinator. We also now have a very robust online presence. We have a lot to talk about. The working groups are active and meeting. And then I think it's a really important opportunity to remind the public that we are indeed taking the input that had been solicited during the visioning process, where we heard from thousands of Utahns weighing in on their preferred development scenario, where we did grassroots public involvement with presenting to city councils and having roundtable discussions. We want to remind folks that that had been done, and we're building on it now that we're transitioning to the planning phase. We also think that there were some really key takeaways that Erin and her team were able to develop during the visioning process. Quantifiable metrics related to the broader Point of the Mountain area and that 20,000 acres of undeveloped land. The fact that we anticipate, if done well for the broader region in developing, we could see potentially 150,000 high-paying jobs come to the area. We could see an additional $10,000. There's a lot that'll go into that too, but that's kind of high level. We do also anticipate meeting with editorial boards and really just making sure that our message is getting out there. And we'll be in touch separately with several of you on that, as well as getting a save the date out to you. But wanted to get it on your radar that Monday, September 14th is tentatively what we're looking at for an on-site press conference and public launch. And that's my report.
Thank you very much, Muriel, and outstanding work. It's an exciting time, and I hope you can all plan on joining us for that anticipated presser on site, August 28th. Am I right about that?
September 14th. We moved it around a little bit from the last time that we talked.
Okay. All right. You'll let us know on that. And
yep.
Thanks. So the last item on our agenda actually is a couple more, but what I'd like to do is turn some time directly to Alan to provide us an overview on the working groups. Muriel, when I was looking at those agendas and those, everything that's been done on the working group, very impressive group, and those that are invited and attending. And I have not been able to make it, but Alan, you've been responsible for organizing those, and the chairs of those coming from our board. We'll turn the time to you and allow you to give us an overview. You'll have to unmute yourself there, Alan.
If I'm muted, I don't reveal my ignorance as quickly, so it's good. Thanks so much, Tyler. Thanks for all you're doing to help us administratively here. We know that you've got more than a full-time job already. And thanks to the co-chairs of each of the working groups for putting in yet more time in this effort. Rather than going through each group individually, I think I'll just give kind of a quick overview of where we are and let us wrap up. But we've got five working groups. They met 2 weeks ago. They all went well. We had a robust discussion in each one of them. And I think as an indicator of enthusiasm, I had several individual members contact me following the meetings with additional thoughts, people they wanted to introduce me to, requests for individual meetings. So they're getting engaged. We've taken the information that came out of those meetings, as well as having reviewed the public process that the Development Commission went through, and identified kind of key concepts that have been developed in those processes. Earlier today, we sent out an email to all the working group members that summarized the key concepts for each of those five groups. We're asking them to look at it, and if they've got additional ideas, to send those to me by Thursday. On Friday, I'll compile them and see if I can have kind of a comprehensive list of concepts on Friday. Next week, we're going to send out a survey that will ask the members of those groups to prioritize those concepts. The idea is that when we meet that fourth week of August, we'll have a really good starting point We'll work with them to refine that list and identify those concepts that are most important to each group. That'll be the raw material for our request for qualifications that'll be sent out to the potential planning firms, giving them an idea of what we're trying to accomplish and allowing us to make sure that those groups have the qualifications needed to accomplish the goals and set out by these groups. We'll then work over the next few months to refine those lists, get a little more detail around the highest priorities, put together short reports from each of the groups that can help in the RFP process that Steve described, and can go to our successful planning firm at the beginning of the year to help guide their early efforts on master planning. So we think we've got a path forward that is, requests meaningful work from these folks, and we're hoping to build alliances with most or all so that we can solicit their help as we recruit companies, as we generate ideas, as we review drafts of the master plan. So thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Any questions of Alan on the working group or their progress and plan? Thank you. Any quick comments from any of you that have been serving as chairs of those groups that would like to weigh in just briefly on that experience? Has it been positive?
Yeah, let me just say something. Dave Wolstenholme, Commissioner Wolstenholme, and I have the Education Research and Innovation Working Group. I was really impressed by the individuals that Alan had brought together. I didn't know anyone, and it's going to be a very interesting group. And Aaron referenced earlier about how important the innovation aspect of this is going to be. So we got off to a good start, just a good overview of what the project is, what the roles are, what the role of the board is, what the role of the working groups are, and what's expected. And we're off and running.
Thanks, Representative. Could you sense, is the group high level of interest in what's going on there?
Oh, yeah, a high level of interest. Really, some folks from the tech community farther south and, really wanting to know what, like Muriel was saying, I mean, there's been a lot of faith-promoting rumors, if we can say, but we've got to nail this down into what this actually is. And so lots of interest. Lots of good interest. It's going to be fun.
Thanks, Steve. Any other comments? So
I'll give an update for everyone. Val and I are the co-chairs of the Economic Development, Recruiting, and Investment Committee. And Alan put together a really good group for that meeting, too. I mean, we had people from private sector, we had Economic Development of Utah. We just had a good group of people. So I think that's gonna really help with driving forward in some of the recruiting of companies. We had some good input from Stan Lockhart, who spent a lot of years with that Micron and IM Flash. I didn't know anyone either on that group. But I thought it was a really good group of people, because I think some of them have experience with corporations that have already come here to Utah. Some of them have experience with tax incentives. Some of them have experience with corporations that haven't set foot in Utah either, or maybe you have had some apprehensions, and kind of help us with what do we need to do to recruit to them. I think it's been interesting as we've talked, we have a lot of, I live in Alpine, and we have this thing where old timers don't want anyone coming in Alpine. They don't want development. They don't want to see growth. They don't want to see more traffic. We don't have a stoplight. There's not one in the whole city, and we'll probably have one someday. So the group was a nice balance between some idealistic ideas and some with realism, knowing that we're going to have growth, but how can we manage it, not make traffic worse, not make the smog worse or our air quality. So I think we had a really good group of people. And then, Alan, do you have anything else to input on that?
No, I think that's a great summary. Thank you.
Thank you, April, and Representative Haney for giving us some insight. And let me just say thank you for those of you who have accepted those assignments and acted in those leadership capacities. I greatly appreciate it. I've asked Alan, in the interest of time, if he would defer his report and he can supplement any necessary information, perhaps with an email to the group. We're trying hard to keep this meeting within the confines, but it's hard because there's so much great information. And so thank you for those that have presented. Thank you, members of the board, for showing up and engaging. And with that, I would entertain a final motion. If anyone would like to make that motion, if you'd raise your hand, I'll call on you.
Mr. Chair, Mayor Walker, I move that we adjourn this fine meeting.
Motion is by Mayor Walker that we adjourn. Do I have a second? A second by Representative Handy. I can just tell, right, Handy? It's been motioned and seconded that we adjourn. All in favor say aye. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much again, and stay healthy, and thanks for your great effort and your work. Bye-bye.